Good evening. This is Mae Bressel. This is broadcast number 743, March the 3rd, 1986. There are a few items in the news that I want to run down with you very quickly. I won't elaborate on them, just call attention to what is happening, and then continue with part 5 on the Space Shuttle Challenger, the explosion, and what I thought happened and is coming down in the investigation into the Challenger. Of course, number one item, it's a toss-up between events in the Philippines and around the world, but I think a very serious item to consider is the murder of Prime Minister Olof Palme of Sweden, a very liberal man born from what he described as an aristocratic family. He turned left in terms of considering the poor. He compared Richard Nixon's bombing of Hanoi to Hitler's bombings, and there's an article in the New York Times, March 1st, 1986, but a lot of good articles about his background. He was a decent person who tried to work for the poor, the imbalance of rich and poor, and he was gunned down in Sweden like a dog. Of course, the radical, the left, the German groups are claiming credit for killing him. This is similar to the Italian brigades, the Red Brigades, that were formed by Licio Gelli and the P2 agent provocateurs to blame the left for killing a man like this. And the investigators look for the left. It's like the SLA being the left. The SLA is the CIA, and they have wiped out a very important politician, probably the most liberal in the world today. Another article that was in the news this week was Advanced Genetic Sciences, the corporation with tentacles to Germany and to Belgium and Sweden and to the law offices of Sullivan Cromwell, the group that I've been talking about for the last month. They have been spraying evidently a tree or trees, some trees, in the northern part of California without any permission to do it. And now the Environmental Protection Agency has come in and said, we thought that we didn't give you permission to spray these trees, that there's a possibility that insects and birds could carry this living bacteria away, take it from the sap around the injection wounds of the trees. So they're so anxious to put on strawberry plants in Monterey County and see how far it travels that they were caught already doing this in Berkeley, California. Mr. Conrad, Joseph Conrad, the cartoonist, has a picture of the space shuttle and then making appropriately cartoons on this tragic event. February 27th, 1986 in the LA Times. The tip of it is called The Image. Another section is called Pride. The body of it is called Money. Underneath is a schedule pressure. Down below is a little bit of ambition. And on the wings is cost cutting. And the base is public relations. And the title of the cartoon is Autopsy of a Catastrophe. Another cartoon by a man named Marlette in the Los Angeles Times Sunday section has Uncle Sam holding these skeletons, and he's in a sea of about 40 skeletons, and he has one in his hand, our own United States Uncle Sam, saying, "Alas, poor Ferdinand, I knew him well. Alas, poor baby Doc, I knew him. Alas, poor Shaw. Alas, poor Somoza. Alas, poor..." And that cartoon is similar to what I had on the air last week when I was talking about certain political events that are taking place, the election in Portugal, with a socialist being elected there. And I said the next country he will hold up the head and say, "Alas, poor Pinochet," and then "Alas, poor Ronald Reagan," for his close affinity to the Nazi Gestapo network, the Odessa network, through his entire political career since making movies with Errol Flynn in Hollywood. And then we have to go to the head of South Korea and Taiwan and hold up all those skulls, and those are our foreign policy. Almost everyone in the country, I suppose, heard Representative Robert Dornan from California describing Vladimir Posner, the commentator on ABC radio or TV, as being a disloyal, betraying little Jew. Now, I'm wondering if this wasn't a cause and effect, a disinformation, or a provocateur kind of operation. William Casey has a large control of ABC, our CIA director, and his capital cities that he formed bought ABC. And I'm wondering if they put Mr. Posner on following Ronald Reagan's speech so that they would have an excuse to identify disloyalty and betraying with Jewishness in this country. Of course, Rabbi Abraham Cooper of the Wiesenthal Center protected Dornan. They said he's not an anti-Semite, that he helped in Germany in 1979 to get rid of the statute of limitations on prosecuting war criminals. But then Cooper and Wiesenthal cover up the lies about Joseph Mengele, and right away the Holocaust Center, Wiesenthal Center, was protecting Dornan. Jean Kirkpatrick, Alexander Haig, Robert Dornan, there's a whole list of people, Jerry Falwell, that are very close to certain Jews and to certain organizations that make them appear that they're not anti-Semitic. But this is the first time that I remember on the floor of the Congress hearing this or anything like it for a long time, because it doesn't matter who they're talking about. When you talk about disloyal, betraying little Jews, the name Posner is long forgotten, and he's put on ABC so that I believe Dornan can come back with the remark. Also, our president is getting pretty nervous with the news media now that they're linking him to the pressure on the space shuttle. And so with his microphone allegedly off, you all know that he referred to them as sons of bitches, just as he had the mic off when he announced he was ready to attack the Soviet Union in 1 minute. He was angry that Mr. Posner could follow his speech, but I believe that right on top of Ronald Reagan's speech, to have a Soviet citizen talking and interviewed and on the station ABC, it gives a chance to put a lot of ideas into the congressional record and into the news media that people might not be thinking about. Now, this past week, Senator Richard Lugar had gone to the Philippines and helped Marcos ease his way out, and then he swings back with the material. The United States is urged to apply Manila goals in Managua, Nicaragua. Now, Senator Lugar, who wants to attack militarily the country of Nicaragua that America has decimated and controlled for years, is the same Lugar that allegedly worked with Horace Sima, a known Nazi war criminal from Hungary, who lived in Madrid and picked up money from Horace Sima and the Nazi Third and Fourth Reich combined to put in the Swiss bank account for the accounts of Richard Nixon when he was running for president. It's no wonder that Mr. Palmer identified Richard Nixon with behavior like Adolf Hitler when the money comes right out of the till of the probably the Bormann Brotherhood Fund, or to continue the Nazi policies, and the bag man, of course, is Mr. Lugar. Another story in the New York Times this week, U.S. may return some Marcos money. He was printing paper money and took coins, and there's several million dollars in currency that we want him to return to the Philippines. One of the biggest scandals in this country is that 80% of the currency of the United States has gone out of this country and is now in South America and Swiss banks, probably in the hands of the Odessa and the Mormon Brotherhood. So they shuffle these coins around. Marcos takes out a few million. He'll put it back. Our money leaves the country and gets probably siphoned out to dictators and drug dealers all over the world. The excuse for Ronald Reagan and George Shultz to push $100 million for Contra aid was described in the LA Times this week. Reagan was complaining that they have repression in Nicaragua, they have subversion, they have terrorism and drug trafficking. There have been many reports that the drug trafficking come out of Nicaragua is from the Contras themselves buying guns and doing the drug trafficking. And Mr. Banzar, Hugo Banzar, and the pals of Klaus Barbie down in Bolivia, who attended the Republican convention in 1984, were some of the biggest drug dealers in the world, as are Madame Chenault and the Kumatung, the Chinese mafia, and Reverend Moon with Mr. Ryosha Sasakawa. The right wing has been involved in drug traffic the last 40, 50 years, and the CIA very much escalated since Vietnam and since the Shah of Iran was in, and opening up these various routes of drug traffic. So Reagan's excuse for a military operation there is that there's drugs, and yet there's an open record of drugs linked to funds put in the bank, the F. Hutton Bank, the investment house, the stock brokerage run by George Bush's brother-in-law, Scott Pierce, and mafia money, pizza, mafia, heroin traffic money in the account of Merrill Lynch. Well, and during the time that Donald Reagan, the chief of staff of the White House, was the head of Merrill Lynch. So this story of we have to go in because there's drugs is ridiculous. Another very important story this past week was that the judge, U.S. District Judge Julian Cook Jr., has put off the DeLorean trial 5 months. Now, I don't play too much on rumors on World Watchers, as you know, but I did pick up a story that Ed Meese is interfering with the trial in Detroit where he's supposed to come up with where this missing $8.9 million was. It's reduced. At one point, it was $17 million and $23 million. He took $8.9 million that was supposed to go into Ireland, and that was taken away from the Utah company that he had there. But the money that he took out of Utah and out of the accounts, as I understood it and had on the air for years, was to go to Claus Barbie to buy cocaine, and the money that Barbie had, he put in Joseph Mengele's account in Sweden, in Zurich, Sweden, Switzerland, rather. So now the judge has delayed five more months, and I understand that Edwin Meese, the Attorney General, and Pat Robertson, he's very close with John DeLorean. Pat Robertson is helping DeLorean get off this rap in Detroit and then look for Pat Robertson to run as vice president under George Bush. I'm going to be writing to the U.S. District Judge in Detroit this week and calling the Justice Department and the FBI to see what I can do as a private citizen to complain. Now, the inquiry has been going on regarding the Air India crash. We are concerned, of course, when seven astronauts are killed. 329 people were killed on a Boeing 747, a bomb that went off, and they have confirmed by bringing up all the parts that they need to know that there was, in fact, a bomb on that plane that killed those people. There also was a bomb on a plane that was supposed to go to Bombay that left from Vancouver. And the men involved with the bomb on the East Coast allegedly had trained with Franklin Camper at our training camp for hired mercenaries where they teach to blow up airplanes and so forth. Camper has close links, as I've said before, to John Connolly and the Permandex operation, the group that create these assassinations for political purposes, the gang that were supposed to invade Dominica with their Nazi armbands and swastikas and their links to the Aryan Nations, to Richard Butler up in Idaho. All of these things connect to violence all over the world. And so planes blow up, prime ministers are killed, and there is still a lot of work to be done to get to find out who does these things. Another item about a political assassination and the consequences afterwards, Egypt is having a big problem now. The New York Times and LA Times, the various papers this week, had the story of Egypt's security police chief was ousted. They've had at least 36 deaths that we know of, and the paramilitary police have been very active. President Mubarak was with George Bush just 2 days before Mr. Sadat was murdered, and there were close links of the CIA to the overthrow of Sadat with his peacekeeping with the Israeli government and putting Mr. Mubarak into power. Now, he replaced his former security chief with a Major Badr, B-A-D-R. His name is Zaki Badr, a former internal security officer. And Badr was the one who was the governor of a particular city called Assyriot, a stronghold of Islamic fundamentalism that was very active at the time of the assassination of Anwar Sadat in 1981. So he has moved his former police chief out, and the one in power now worked with him and was active in putting down the fundamentalists when Sadat was murdered, because they had to quell any possibility of opening this up or street riots at the time, and now he's become the head of the Egyptian police. But I'm sure that the Egyptian people will be rumbling, just as those in the Philippines, and one of these days we will see riots there to get rid of Mubarak and his team of assassins. Finally, there is two stories, the LA Times and New York Times this week. One for the New York Times about the trial in Rome, an unsettling question at Rome trial. And this is about Sergei Antonov spending 3 years in jail, and the prosecutor has asked for an acquittal because there wasn't evidence in 3 years that the Bulgarians and Mr. Antonov had a role in planning to shoot the Pope. They're not going to invest the fascist connections. They're going to ignore those, the New York Times says, and Bulgaria wants to try Aja for his links to the right wing, which, of course, the Italian government doesn't intend to do. And then the out that they will use on declaring an acquittal is that Agent is crazy, and this past week, again, he's comparing himself to Jesus and talking about World War III. And what I said when the trial first began, the very first day, that it would open that way and end that way, and if they didn't have any evidence, they could say Agent was crazy, not that the investigators didn't have enough material, which they admit, to convict poor Mr. Antonov And now they're going to acquit those people, let them off, which they should have never even considered the arrest that they did at the time. And then finally, just one more of these stories to update. Ronald Reagan has approved a fund of arms for Saudi Arabia. He put aside a promise of giving weapons to Saudi Arabia just before the Bitburg conference, but he didn't want to connect money to Saudi Arabia to putting wreaths on the Waffen SS graves. So now there's been this little time limit, and it's February and 28th. New York Times, it has a story, 300 million worth of missiles go to Saudi Arabia. And at the time of Bitburg, they were arranging that Great Britain would loan the money, or accept the money rather, from Saudi Arabia for the weapons, but it would really be coming from the United States. Alan Cranston is objecting to this. They say that Saudi Arabia funds the Palestine Liberation Army. They give money to the Syrians. They undercut the United States' anti-terrorist policy in the Middle East. They won't support King Hussein of Jordan. They continue to snub Egypt because Egypt had some accords with Israel, which they stabbed behind their back. And again, Reagan is depending on Senator Richard Lugar, chairman of the Foreign Relations Committee, to smooth over the feelings of the Jews that all of this money is going to Saudi Arabia. They're still violently anti-Semitic, anti-Israel. And this was right on top of the Bitburg, so he gave it a few months to smooth it over. Now to the space shuttle for the remaining of this program and for many, many weeks to come. Just as a quick summary, because of the news that is coming in about the space shuttle Challenger, and for those of you who have listened to the past broadcasts that I've done the past 4 weeks, I just want to run through, not everything, of course, of those, just a few key points. I began the Monday after the Challenger went down on Tuesday, and the Monday after that, February the 3rd, I had point number one, that the president was giving his speech scheduled for Tuesday, January 28th, and he needed his teacher, Krista McAuliffe, up there to synchronize with his State of the Union message to Congress. Now, this morning at 5 a.m., I woke up and saw on CNN Mr. Hollings, Senator Ernest Hollings, talking about asking who did the pressure to launch the space shuttle in the cold. And yesterday he was on David Brinkley for a half hour, and he was talking about the same question. All of Washington is talking about it. I got from very good sources that Washington knew, two newspapers in particular, they already know that it was ordered from the White House, and now it is seeping through, and I couldn't put it on my program as a fact that Washington had accepted, but now they're closing in on who made the phone call. I called Senator Hollings' office today, the branch of the Commerce Committee that he's on, and gave them some suggestions about what to do to look for answers to who pressured, and I'll share those with you in 1 minute. So 4 weeks ago, the first point was that the president was having a speech that night, and he had to wait, and why the teacher in space? It was a political gimmick at the time of the 1984 elections. And then the next week, also on that February the 3rd, I was talking about the weather being a factor, and how the liftoff was delayed. It forced the delay, and how Jesse Moore of NASA said on Sunday, we won't be forced, there's a schedule pressure, but nobody can pressure us, and the delays of the sandstorm and the wind, and then the low temperature that would be a problem, which they said, and how Rockwell had complained about the icicles and the cancellation early in the morning that I had heard about, and they went, even though it wasn't much warmer, they looked at the icicles. And there's a scandal on that story that I'll be getting to, if not this week, hopefully next week. And then they repaired the ship for an hour on a part of the ship that had to do with the temperature or readings that would indicate to the command post, I suppose, what the temperatures were. And that was broken. And how the fuel tank might burst and be dislodged, or seams would be ruptured and the hydrogen would break through. And at that first week, there was not awareness that the rubber seals freeze in cold temperature and don't band to accommodate covering over the area where the hydrogen gets out. There was worry about the chipping on the side of the ship done by repairmen from Lockheed, and also there was concern about icicles causing cracks in the seams. And I thought it was very important about the emphasis that the president would have on Star Wars and space, and now it seems that this Challenger being blown up the more I study, and it's 4 weeks later, is that they already knew it was going to blow up, that this would be, as I said on the broadcast, the run of the litter. They would unload it, and they already have a machinery out at Vandenberg ready to warm up the shuttle so they don't have any more problems. They already have a new booster rocker designed and developed so they don't have to worry about this. And this one had given them so many problems with inches of exploding in 1983, and they were able to solve it at that time. And I also emphasize how Ronald Reagan was using the teacher as really the only civilian while six military people were up there and hiding the purposes of the use of the NASA space shuttle as if it was for social and scientific reasons. The next week, on February the 10th, I emphasized the chronology, which was very important because now there are many, many articles, and I will be outlining them for you, on the disarray that the NASA organization was into, and I want to define NASA in a moment. But in it was March 23rd, 1983, 3 years ago, when Reagan presented his Star Wars, like a big production like Cecil DeMille, da-da-da, you know, here's my Star Wars. And it was at that time, in August of 83, that the Challenger was used and could monitor Larry McDonald when he went down, another Cold War strategy that gave Ronald Reagan every cent for every weapon he wanted from that moment on, and how then the Challenger and all the space shuttles were to be moved from commercial exploratory reasons to military uses, because in the month that I tried to explain this to you, you must be seeing more and more how the military is going to gain from all of this and how the military controlled the entire operation from beginning to end. And I cited the warfare of NASA, the various organizations in the Pentagon that were fighting with each other. And again, there's long stories about their failure and to get along with each other, the dislike of various people such as James Beggs, a NASA director, and who was moved out, and William Graham, the acting director, and the infighting in the White House, the policies, the Pentagon versus the Star Wars, and the involvement of Rockwell and Morton Thiokol of warning that it was dangerous, but if the shuttle still went down, they will make contracts along with Lockheed. And I was trying to illustrate the second week after it went down, the infighting in Washington, the infighting among NASA people, and the unloading of the James Watt Rainbow Coalition, the Japanese, the black, the Jew, and two women. I believe that the indications now are that as sinister as your mind wants to believe, and that they even knew in advance that this thing was going to go down and waited till it was specifically cold. I couldn't figure out why, if it was warm on Sunday, it's a shock enough that they didn't go because it was Super Bowl Sunday, but they could have gone Monday afternoon or Tuesday afternoon, and I believe that the ICE team were right when they said that they only tested it, they didn't report it. The purpose is to test the cold to find out if it works, and now they know and don't have to use that booster anymore, that rocket, that the cold does affect the machinery, and they'll move to California where they have a warm set up, ready to go, where it won't be cold again. The Air Force, I cited, not only destroyed the most important piece of evidence they had within seconds, it was so quick the way they destroyed that booster and then said, oh, that's our most important evidence, that they must have known, you know, after it warmed up, just at the time of explosion, that was just as it was going up. It actually took 70, a minute and 2 seconds or something for it to go up and be destroyed. But from the time that the fuel was let out, the ship was doomed. And now I believe it was doomed long before, months before, or even a year before, that something like this would be pulled. And they would set it, this one, for the January launch and wait till it was cold. And I have reason to believe that it is even more bad than we imagine. Also, after the second week, the accidental damage from the derrick, they didn't bother to x-ray the fuel tank. That was cited in Newsweek, and I want to go into that point in a moment, the importance of that, and also that the Air Force knew immediately the cause of explosion, and they've known it since mid-July and in August when their reports, so they were going against all odds. If they did that, then they had to want it to go up, and they had no apologies. They said, we did the right thing, as if it were military orders, and I believe it was. And then on February 17th, the third week, of discussion of the Shuttle Challenger Tape 741. I asked again, who made the decision against the NASA rules, against Morton Thiokol, to have this shuttle be launched in the cold? Of course, the answers were explained a little bit on public television on CNN this past week. I taped them, about 15 cassettes, 90 minutes each, and took the sound part, because my video wasn't down in L.A., to see the chain of command and how the system works, and came to the conclusion that the Nazis equal NASA, N-A-S-A equals, down in Huntsville, Alabama, were the people who spoke specifically to a Mr. Lund and to put the pressure on him, and that the Marshall Space Center in Huntsville, Alabama, was the agency that pushed this, even though they knew the flaws and pretend the flaws weren't there. And, of course, they continue to have the most to gain. If the thing doesn't work, it's not that important. And finally, last week, broadcast number 742, I was asking questions from various articles describing why the cover-up, such as Forces Go Awry from Accident Chain, and then the intrusion of the word politics, that they tried to blame it on human errors, but finally the word politics got in the news, that Dan Rather said that the launch in cold weather was a political decision, and also another article in the Washington Post February the 9th that it was political. By then, 3 weeks later, or almost a month later, the story about who asked it to launch was being circulated all about Washington, and the word political was getting into the media, and the various newspaper people were beginning to hear the truth about what happened. And the San Jose Mercury had a story, the testimony is so dramatic and unexpected that they agreed that President Reagan should be informed. And I believe if he knew and ordered them to fly, he knew what was going on all the time and was informed. Now they're seeking what they said was a white knight for the demoralized space station. They brought in Mr. Fletcher, who was the former space agency, rather, who was the former director of NASA. He took time out to work with Ronald Reagan's committee to investigate Star Wars and missile defense of the United States, which in turn is the Star Wars. He's from Utah. He was president of the University of Utah, a scientist who is close to Morton Thiokol, to Orrin Hatch, to Jake Garn, the senators from Utah, and that is a state that gets $300 to $400 million a year from just the Morton Thiokol contracts with NASA anyway. And so they're bringing in Mr. Fletcher, and we'll do more on him, who is close to the very people who went against their own engineers and scientists. And he is like Earl Warren being brought in again to cover up the Challenger. And Mr. Fletcher is an interesting character. There's a lot about him in the paper now. He is going to be their white knight. Donald Reagan, the chief of staff, had ordered him to take over the investigation, and he literally cried like Earl Warren with the Warren Commission, with LBJ telling him, you have to organize this and take care of the commission for us. So as the cover story evolves, that there were chains of errors and factors converged, and design flaws and so forth, they're still covering up the story that people made decisions to go against the very machinery that they knew would not function under those circumstances, and therefore they didn't want it to function, and therefore you have to ask who gains and who loses. And as you read the articles on the financial pages and in between the lines, it becomes more clear every day to see who are the winners and losers. Now, the Monterey Herald had a story this morning, and I'm sure you people had, and it came over the wire service. It had to do with that TV show yesterday and the interview of Senator Hollings, and the title of the article is, NASA Was Pressured, Senator Hollings Suggests, and he's been saying this all week. Senator Ernest Hollings urged that the investigators determine whether NASA was pressured to launch because the presence of teacher Kristen McAuliffe on the ill-fated flight put extra pressure on the agency to launch. I want to know, where is the pressure from? Is it from Congress? Of course not. Is it contract pressure? They said no. But there was contract pressure for Morton Thiokol. If they didn't launch, they wouldn't get a new contract that was up for renewal at the time. Is it White House pressure, or is it Pentagon pressure? Well, it could be two, White House and Pentagon. We'll take a one-minute break and go on to the pressure that is upon the committee now to find out who put the pressure to launch. And Senator Hollings is really pushing this. He's been pushing it all week.